Hello, Bart. Blessings to my listeners. Welcome to the Medicine Path Podcast, Episode 6. We're going to talk about soul fragmentation, soul retrieval, and some tools for protection or psychic defense. But first, I just want to share a short story with you guys about the dream catcher. So, I run a little store called Wildercraft Studios, and my wife and I, we make some dream catchers and a lot of other different things, and we travel around to some of the fairs and expos and things, and we see a lot of dream catchers made in China and a lot of dream catcher inspired things, and see a lot of mostly unknowing appropriation of culture and some maybe misrepresentation around the dream catcher. So I just thought I'd share an Ojibwe story about the dream catcher. So the old Ojibwe say Spider Woman helped bring Grandfather Sun back to the people. Spider Woman took care of and protected her children, including mankind, as Creator's gift to the animals. Long ago, in the ancient world of the Ojibwe nation, the clans were all located in one area of Turtle Island. As the Anishinaabe grew and spread across the back of the Great Turtle and beyond, Grandmother Spider had a hard time making journeys to all the baby cradle boards. All the mothers, the sisters, and grandmothers weaved magical webs for the Binogians, for the babies, using willow hoops and sinew. The shape of the circle represents how Grandfather's Sun travels across the sky. The dream catcher filters out the bad dreams and allows only good thoughts to enter into our minds when we sleep. A small hole in the center of the dream catcher is where the good dreams come through. With the first rays of sunlight, the bad dreams will perish. When we see Grandmother Spider, we should not fear her, but instead respect and protect her. In honor of their origin, many dream catchers have 8 points where the web connects to the hoop, 8 points for Grandmother Spider's 8 legs. Some people place a feather in the center of the dream catcher to symbolize breath or air, which represent the first breath of the baby, where the spirit enters the body. From the cradle board, the baby can watch the air play with the feather and be happily entertained with the blowing feather. So that's the Ojibwe story, or one of the Ojibwe stories of the dream catcher, and just a little bit about it. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed the short story before we get started. So, on with the episode. But before talking about soul retrieval, we should talk a little bit about the soul itself. What is the soul? Now, my understanding is not the generic model of understanding that you'll see depicted on the internet everywhere. In my model of understanding, the soul is consciousness and the spirit is life force energy. Together, these two make up a being. These two together within a physical form make up a living being. So when I say that the soul is consciousness, I mean all consciousness, every aspect of it, from personal to collective, ego, superego, and id. The ego is the mediator which gives agency to an individual. The superego is akin to the higher self or conscience, and the id is the unconscious, at least if we're talking Freudian psychology. Outside of that, I tend to use the medicine wheel and the world's tree models to describe all things, including consciousness. So if the soul is fragmented, that means that some level of your consciousness, how you identify yourself within either your conscious or subconscious mind, is fragmented. Now, in preparation for this episode, I watched half a dozen videos on YouTube of shamanic practitioners talking about soul retrieval, and I listened to a couple of podcasts from pretty well-known shamanic practitioners to hear their perspectives, and I've just got to say there were a few that were on the same page as me, but the majority were not only not on the same page, but they were in a completely different book. Now, that's not saying I'm disagreeing with them, just that we're in different places of understanding. So just be aware that there are different understandings out there around what the soul is and what soul fragmentation is and what soul retrieval is. So with my model of the medicine wheel, it's spherical. It's not two-dimensional, not a circle. It represents the self in this context. The individual is at the center, and the four cardinal directions each represent an aspect of the self, creating the larger circle that is often referred to as the sacred hoop. From that center, there are still three more directions apart from the cardinal four winds. We can also look above us, below us, as well as within. Above, we find the upper world and what, in my interpretation, Freud would have called the superego, what many of us call the higher self. Below, we would find the lower world or underworld and what Freud would call the id and what many of us would call the shadow. If we look at the surface of the center, the outer ring of the center, we find what Freud would have called the ego, which many of us call the ego, but a lot of people use the word ego to refer solely to egotism, which is an overinflated sense of self-importance. But I lost my spot here. Anyway, so the ego to me is the part that we put forward, whether consciously or not, which is a tool to give the total self agency in ordinary reality. If we look within that center, we can find the true authentic self, the actual being that we are, both divine and human, balanced and whole, connected to all directions equally. Each direction has many associations for different contextual uses of the medicine wheel, and in one context, I even utilize Jungian archetypes and how they relate to our consciousness. We may go further into that in another episode. Looking at ourselves in this sphere, as this sphere, the soul and the spirit are present in every aspect, emotional, social, physical, and mental. A lot of people wonder why I see consciousness in all of these aspects instead of just the mental. When we look at cell memory, cellular intelligence, microbiology, those all indicate that we're conscious on every level, not just mentally, and considering ancestral karma, ancestral trauma, blood memory, all those types of things, it all point the same direction to me. Anyway, when we're in balance within all of these aspects, the sphere is like a force field around us. It makes up our consciousness and life force energy. It's made up of our consciousness and life force energy, and many people will call this our aura. In Native America, it's often referred to as the sacred hoop. When we're out of balance, this energy field is affected as our soul, or consciousness, and spirit, or life force energy, are affected. Now, soul loss is caused by imbalance. Imbalance can be caused by trauma, by negative environments, by behaving in a way that one believes is wrong or acting against our own truth. There are also cases of a more mystical or esoteric nature that can, much less frequently, but can happen, ranging from curses and energetic vampirism, you know, all kinds of spiritual attack or non-human or multidimensional entities causing harm or becoming attached. So, if you've suffered trauma that you're not able to deal with, it can be repressed and pushed into unconsciousness. If you continue to repress the same thing over and over, this can be pushed into that lower world, into this place of unconsciousness, really deep. This actually often causes part of your consciousness to become stuck on the loop of that trauma, and it'll manifest triggers and imbalance in areas that most often will not make sense without self-reflection and mindfulness from a place of honesty. So if all consciousness is the soul, and you're suffering from imbalance due to repression of parts of your consciousness, this greatly affects that sphere, that force field, that aura, the sacred hoop. This is what many people call soul loss, at least to some extent. Is it really lost, though? It's still a part of your overall consciousness, it's just not part of your waking consciousness within your perception of ordinary reality. It has become subconscious or unconscious, and it's taken a bigger role in your perception of non-ordinary reality. Now, you guys may have heard me talk about, or at least use the terms, non-ordinary reality and ordinary reality. So ordinary reality is the shared reality that we all have some perception of. The plain old physical world, the matrix. Non-ordinary reality is all that doesn't fit in ordinary reality, but it's nevertheless an integral part of reality. It's the space of the dream time and deeper consciousness, different states of consciousness. It's a place that's affected more. It's affected in different ways than ordinary reality is. So soul loss, anyway, allows weak points in your sacred hoop, in that energetic field. This can allow bad winds. A bad wind is essentially a collection of negative thoughts, emotions, and energies that are drawn to one another over time. So having a weak point in your energetic field, in your sacred hoop, or having a broken sacred hoop, that can allow these bad winds to have a much stronger effect on you. It can also allow spiritual and psychic attack to affect you much more. It can allow entities to get inside your space and to cause further harm, and even entity attachment. It's a bit like how mosquitoes, moths, and other little crawlers and critters are often drawn to the light so that they can feed off the energy of that light. Many spiritual entities will behave in this way, and lots of living people will behave in the same way, often not even being aware of it. Misery loves company. So how does one go about identifying soul loss and doing soul retrieval? Unpopular opinion: while someone experienced may be able to help, they can't do it for you. The individual must do so via what's often called shadow work. This is about identifying triggers, tracing them to the point of trauma, and dealing with that trauma. Shadow work is notoriously difficult and requires a great deal of self-reflection and integrity and honesty. Actually, the best tip that I can offer as far as tools to do the shadow work is to work with the 7 grandfather teachings that we spoke about. I think it was in episode 2. So yes, someone can facilitate your shadow work and offer support, ceremony, healing, grounding, and more, but the individual has to do the work. To me, shadow work looks like this. 1, identify and admit trauma. 2, accept it, including your part in it. 3, forgive others and the self. 4, release it and then begin again. Now, you may have to go through this cycle several times, and that's okay. Everything is cyclical, and just keep moving. Without those 7 grandfather teachings, progress will be difficult. They really do make it easier. They're great gates. So just as a reminder, the 7 grandfather teachings are love, humility, respect, truth, honesty, courage, and wisdom. They're all tempered by one another, and they've all got to be used together. Yes, it is hard. I encourage you to seek help. I encourage you to keep a journal, record your dreams and your emotions and your triggers. So how might a sacred helper be able to help you with this? Well, soul retrieval is not done by a, quote, shaman just beating a drum and smudging you and waving a magic staff over you or anything like that. Now, a traditional helper or a keeper of the sacred may actually use such tools to help you or to bless you or to guide you on your journey to reclaim the fragments of your soul, but they can't just go get it for you. It's not an object that broke off and is now floating around the ether. It's still an integral part of your identity and willpower that you've repressed, rejected, or desensitized to in order to avoid further trauma. It's okay. It happens as a normal defense mechanism in a society, in this Western society, that doesn't allow for the exploration of one's own soul or consciousness, or the expression of it. You can do it. You are more than you realize, and there are people out there that can help. The actual retrieval takes place within the individual, as their soul did not actually go anywhere. It's not actually lost. It's buried or hidden for the protection of the self during a time of trauma. That's why many of us who help people with this sort of thing say you've got to feel it to heal it, because dealing with trauma as it comes up instead of sedating it allows it to heal and restore the balance. Dealing with it after repressing it makes it a lot more work. Once your sacred hoop has been weakened or broken, the traumas and triggers of others begin to have more of an effect on you. Now, this subject actually goes really deep into the connection we have with others and our environment. It can go into everything from any kind of energy exchange, whether it's friendship, any kind of relationship we have with other people, sharing sexual energy, even just being in close proximity to people. So relationships and the energies that we surround ourselves with, they're a part of our environment within and without. Who and what we surround ourselves with affects us deeply. When we give energy, we also receive it. If the energy we are giving or receiving is negative, it affects our inner and outer environments. We are everything from the microcosm to the macrocosm, the within and the without, that will always reflect one another. Sometimes trauma comes from a past lifetime, from ancestral memory, ancestral karma, ancestral trauma. Most frequently, I've seen ancestral trauma cause these issues around what many people call soul loss. It reminds me, in a sense, of the biblical teaching of original sin and the so-called sins of previous generations condemning present and future generations. Now, in my own understanding, we often do carry the undealt with traumas of previous generations, and we can pass that down to future generations. The good news is, if we can heal our own traumas and the traumas of our ancestors, we can prevent that from going down to our descendants. If we can heal ours, we can heal that which has been passed down to us, and we can prevent it from being passed down further. It all resides within us. Also, we have massive support from our ancestors on this journey of healing trauma in our bloodline. Just circling back for a moment to where we discussed the way that the sacred hoop being damaged can allow energies and entities in, and entity attachment. Any number of types of entity can attach to someone as the person being a host in a parasitic relationship between them and an entity. These entities could be human or non-human entities. This could be in a very ordinary human-to-human connection, or this could be in a more non-ordinary connection with non-human entities, multidimensional or otherworldly entities. Just kind of comes back to the thing about pestilence being attracted to the light. So, just offer a little bit about tools for protection now. So, some tools for protection. Vibration, frequency, sound. Now, there's lots of different ways to utilize these. I've just got a little bit of a list here that I'm going to go through. And not all of it's vibration, frequency, sound, but that's the first thing that we're going to go into. So this works really well. Almost any culture around the world would agree that vibrational frequency through sound is very potent when used in prayer, incantation, directing willpower, raising energy, and protection. A few tools for this are the bell. A clear, resounding high tone. It's good for resetting a space, driving out impurity and negativity. Often brass or crystal bells are preferred for their clarity of tone. The drum. A range of deep, low tones can be produced by the drum. Different kinds of drums can have very different tones. The drum is predominantly used to adjust frequencies through rhythm, and when used with a higher tone, can raise vibration. It can also be used effectively to reach trance states of consciousness. The drum, when used with intent, calls in positive energies, banishes negative energies, and can assist in vibrational healing. The drum can also lower vibration to attune with the lower world. Be careful not to do this accidentally. The shaker or the rattle. Now, shakers can vary widely in their make. They can be made of wood, gourds, metal, bone, shells, horn, any number of items. Usually there's a great deal of symbolic intent in a shaker, and typically it will vary between two types of sounds. The first is more of a jingle, not unlike raindrops striking a pool of water, each droplet with its own unique tone. The second is a little bit more percussive. It's more akin to a tight drum. The effect of both sounds is the same. Both types of sound is the same, though the jingle is a little more gentle. They effectively create a shock wave of energy, which clears space and attracts good energy, as well as summoning benevolent entities or ancestral spirits. The shaker is usually used like the drum, with rhythm and resets and adjusts frequencies. Moving away from sound, you have talismans and amulets. Talismans and amulets aren't quite the same thing, but they are very similar, and the primary difference is that amulets are to be worn around the neck. They're both objects made with clear intent and use of symbolism and the beneficial energies within different types of objects or medicine. These can be made specifically for protection. Also, the sacred staff. This is an area that I've actually written quite a lot about, so I'll keep it brief here and may do an episode that goes a lot deeper with the staff, the sacred staff or the medicine staff. Go a little bit deeper on that in another episode. In a nutshell, though, the staff is balance. It's a grip on your center of the universe. It's a ladder between the worlds. It's a powerful tool for amplifying and directing energies. And it's a connection to the collective, as well as a shield or protective spherical force field through its connection to the seven directions. Then smudging. So smudging is burning or smoldering dried medicinal herbs and using the smoke for a specific intention. Most commonly, that's protection, cleansing, and purification. This goes quite deep and works on many, many levels. The medicine of the plants themselves, the focus of intention, the unity of multiple elements. You've got, I'll use a shell bowl to smudge in. So they come from the water. The herbs that I'm burning are coming from the earth. The act of burning it is fire, and then that smoke rising up is air. So you've got a union of elements there, which is a powerful thing. Also, smoke by itself has a very unique frequency that reveals things that may escape our ordinary perception. It also gets into every gap, every nook, every cranny, and it drives out many things. Smoke also only rises, so it's raising vibrations to a higher state. And we have charcoal. Charcoal is significantly more powerful protection than most people realize. It absorbs and attracts toxicity, negativity, and also holds it, neutralizing it. It can be worn, it can be eaten, it can be carried, or even cast in circle or thrown in the directions of negative forces. Salt. Salt is a great transmuter of negativity, often used in casting circle, thrown at sources of negativity. It balances frequency and vibration and is a positive ionizer. Water. You know, we've all heard of holy water. What makes water work in this sense is it's literally adding intent to an element that's very receptive to intent. Water is a great cleanser. You can literally wash away negativity. Earth, as in soil. Using soil in this way isn't done by many, not these days, but it's grounding as well as being very stable. It grounds various energies, and when used with intent, is very potent against negativity and psychic attack. Air, or breath. This one's another one that's very overlooked, and blowing with force and intent is powerful. You can combine this with other elements, with smoke, with water, with alcohol. Alcohol is a pure substance. Or with medicinal essences, you can literally blow the attack or the negativity or the entity away. Fire. Fire is protective, powerful, often used with intent, especially in candle magic. Smudging requires fire. Fire also brings light and warmth to any situation. Now light literally illuminates the darkness. If an attack requires darkness to be effective, boom, light makes it ineffective. It allows you to perceive the physical aspect better, and many entities actually fear light. Light exists in many frequencies, and some light frequencies are better than others for protection. Others are better for other things. The sacred blade, the holy iron, the athame, or otherwise sacred blade. It's a blade made with intent for sacred work, and consecrated thusly. A very potent tool and can cut through illusions, cut cords that bind, and can be used to cast energetic circle and for defense as a knife affecting not only physical but multidimensional entities as well. It's also good for the harvesting of sacred medicines and making other tools. Now, depending on your tradition, the sacred blade may have restrictions on what it can or cannot be used for. Gold. Gold is untarnishable. It's pure and cannot be tainted. It has properties of powerful attraction, abundance, purification, and can be a powerful amulet. However, the greed for it that exists, often subconsciously, can be a vehicle for attacks to come through. This is where those seven sacred laws come in handy as gates or checkpoints, or the seven grandfather teachings. Now, lastly, what I've written here is symbols. It's another one that could have its own book. Symbolism is collective intent through imagery. Everything from wards against evil to peace signs. The frequencies of symbolism are generated to the collective consciousness and are potent as all of the combined will and intent of the collective give them their power. So that's what I have written on tools for protection. And I guess with that, we'll conclude this episode, and I'll get started on the next. Thank you all for taking time out of your day to listen to the Medicine Path podcast. I really hope that you were able to take something good away from this episode. Please feel free to suggest new topics, ask me some questions, leave some feedback. Wish you all the brightest blessings. Bama pi minuaku abmin, ujikiwenoku.